TBRI.
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 TOVD.
TBRI.
TBRI. Trust-based relational intervention.
TBRI is an attachment-based
trauma-informed intervention
that is designed to meet the complex needs
of vulnerable children.
TBRI uses empowering principles
to address physical needs,
connecting principles for attachment needs,
and correcting principles to disarm fear-based behaviors.
While TBRI is based on years of attachment, sensory processing, and neuroscience research,
the heartbeat of TBRI is connection.
Hello and welcome to the TBRI podcast. You're listening to Season 7, Episode 5. On this show, we talk all about TBRI, or Trust-Based Relational Intervention. We talk about different elements of the model itself and also about how TBRI is applied in various communities of care and practice. I'm Emily Pickett, producer of the podcast, and in today's episode, we got to chat with one of our team members here at KPICD, Robin Schielander, just as she transitioned into retirement. Friends, if you have gone through TBRI practitioner training in the last 7 or so years, or if you have ever called KPICD on the phone to ask questions about TBRI practitioner training, or if you have attended some other TBRI adjacent training hosted by our institute, then you have interacted with Robin. Robin joined our team at KPICD in 2015. And in her time as program coordinator, she truly embodied what it means to be trust-based and relational in her interactions with our team and also with the many external partners she connected with on a daily basis. Many of you listening may be in direct care roles, or maybe you train within your organization, but this episode is a great example of the importance of having individuals who live TBRI working in all parts of an organization. We are so grateful that Robin reluctantly agreed to join us on the podcast, and we already miss her dearly. Please enjoy this conversation with Robin Schielander and Sarah Mercado.
Welcome to the podcast, Robin. I am so excited that you joined us today. Would you start by just introducing yourself and telling our listeners a little bit about your role at the Institute? I know, I think your title is program coordinator, but what does that mean?
Good morning, Sarah. I am delighted to be here. So what I am, Robin Schielander, and what does a program coordinator do? I walk with applicants and participants through the entire practitioner training process. I also have the joy, and it really truly is, to do site visits, contract with hotels and buses and speakers, and it's my fault if you don't like the menu, and everything that occurs within the bounds of a particular training.
I mean, a small little job. I think about the scope of work, and I think you started here maybe about a year before I did, or ish. We were somewhere
maybe
close,
2
right?
months before you did. Yeah.
Oh, that's it. Okay, so we were really close. So, we were bright eyed and bushy tailed, and I remember. I don't know if you remember this, but we were at the Sendera Center for. It was early on in my work at the Institute, maybe the first or second practitioner training, where I was employed by the Institute, and we were kind of chatting. I think at that time, we had done one practitioner training outside of Fort Worth, and that was part of the Travis County Collaborative. Is that correct?
That is correct.
Okay. If we had, in that conversation, if I had said to you, you know, hey, guess what? In 7 or 8 years, we're going to be doing these things all over the country. We're going to be doing them on Zoom during a pandemic. We're going to figure that out. And then we're actually going to take these things internationally to Colombia and Ethiopia and all kinds of places that we have dreams of taking it. What do you think you would have said?
Well, what I would have said to you is I would have burst out laughing. And I would have said, really? Really, Sarah? However, if you think about the interview with Dr. Purvis, she talks about how she was called to places that she didn't think she had the capacity to serve.
Mm.
And what I can say now is each of us walked with her, mm-hmm. and we all believed if we had to get it done, we would have the capacity to fill it out.
Boy, isn't that the truth. Man, yes, what a good point. And the interview that Robin's talking about is one that we show at the end of our practitioner trainings, where Dr. Purvis is kind of sharing her thoughts on the future and welcoming our new practitioners into the community. But that's exactly true. I mean, we weren't going to stay comfortable for long at that point. Mm-hmm. And I don't think we've been settled in like, okay, we've reached our capacity yet. Like, I mean, I think we know like the demand is so large. So when you think back to that and you think to where we are now, how do you see, especially on the administrative side, how do you see that the work, and not even, you know what, don't even stick to the administrative side because you have such a wide scope where you see things. How do you see that the work of the Institute has changed over the years?
When I first came to work here, the focus was on reaching, honestly, anyone who was interested in learning about TBRI.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And then we recognized after we lost Dr. Purvis that we could not do this on our own. There mm-hmm. weren't enough of us, the fewer than there are now. And now there's only, what, 25 of us?
Mm-hmm.
That if we were going to do justice to TBRI, we had to help organizations find their champion that could help us with exponential growth. Unfortunately, it meant that we could focus less on individuals,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
try to help them as much as we could. But as a result of doing that and focusing on exponential growth, mm-hmm. I truly believe Dr. Purvis walks around in heaven and whispers TBRI and sprinkles fairy dust from the clouds.
Yeah.
And that's one of the reasons that we have the joy of sharing it with so many people, but it's yeah. because we are trying to identify the champions and let them get out and work with the people in their fields and their areas and their churches and their organizations.
Yeah, that's so true. You know, when I was thinking about that question, I truthfully hadn't really thought about it very much, to be quite honest. And as you're talking, I'm thinking about the difference in like I got to go to practitioner training twice before I worked here. That's unheard of now. Like it is. So like, if you're listening, we don't do that anymore. We don't have the capacity to serve every person who hasn't been through. But when you think about, we had just started to scratch the surface when you started in Austin with the Travis County Collaborative of doing systems change. But we talk about those learning cycles and the patterns that we've seen over the years, the way that we went into that versus the way we enter into communities now and needing like local leadership to, like you said, like we can't do it. We do not have the time. It's fascinating. I really hadn't thought about that. You know, one of the trickies of growing at the pace that we've grown is that it's exhausting, right? Like we strive to meet the need. That was a call of Drs. Purvis and Cross, was to see the need and meet the need. And we say yes a whole lot. We believe the importance of that, right? We want to give all the yeses to the communities, to the kids, to the families. We want other people to do that too. But being in that position of growth, how do you see that internally our working model as a team has needed to shift to meet our own needs?
We have learned to negotiate with each other more.
Mm.
It
mm-hmm.
has, the hardest part of my job personally is having to send regret letters after a application period to say, the applications are incredible, but we have literally run out of seats.
Mm-hmm.
And I worry that people don't believe me when mm-hmm. I say that to them, but it is so true. The people mm-hmm. that want to come to a practitioner training are incredible. Mm-hmm. And not only are the people incredible, but the organizations that are represented by our training specialists. So it is a true negotiation within our staff of, hearing each other talk about this is a need this organization has, this is a need this organization have, and realizing that we are humans and that mm-hmm. we do have capacities, and that sometimes Robin just has to take a step back for a minute and how gracious this organization has been to me, especially mm-hmm. when we were doing trainings online. If you look at phase one and then phase two as unique trainings, in 2021, mm-hmm. we put on 17 trainings. Shoot. And that meant, as you recall, Sarah, we were here at 4 o'clock in the morning working with people. I think we were working in Eastern Europe at that point and staying here until midnight at other trainings. So we all became closer and we all gave each other a whole lot of grace.
Right. There's nothing that screams for grace like getting in the car together at 2:30 in the morning to start a training at 4. I have not had coffee and I have not had sleep. Pour on the grace. Right. I think like, I was thinking about this too, that one of the things I think that we've become incredibly aware of is just even the idea internally of what do you need for each other. And that doesn't always mean like, what do you need to fill out your spreadsheet or what do you need to have that phone call? But like, what do you need in your life? And I remember a while back, we had somebody that was new to the Institute texted me while I was on vacation and said, you know, I know you're on vacation, but, and before I could even come back, she said, she texted me back, I am so sorry. Somebody told me we don't do that. And I was like, that is correct. You know, but like we put boundaries in place. We do a lot of things to make sure that we can stay okay for the long haul.
Can I ask you a question, Sarah?
Yes, absolutely.
Did you answer the text anyway?
No.
Oh, I assumed you would say yes, because that's who you are.
No, if I am on vacation, my boundaries are pretty strict. So I put my out of office on and I run away. So it also was not an urgent matter. So, okay. But I didn't need to because that person already texted me back so fast when they told somebody else that they had texted me. It was funny. But it is learning, right? Because there are so many communities where we're expected to work 24/7, no matter what's going on. And that it's just not healthy. It just does not serve people well. We can't continue to serve at our capacity. And anybody in any serving capacity has to have a break. You just have to be able to turn it off. It's that's why we surround ourselves with the good people that we do, so that problems can be handled while we're away. I think probably when I began in foster care is when I began to really recognize the huge impact that people in administrative roles have on the mission, right? Like every single thing that you do impacts the life of a kid or an adult that's serving that kid, right? Like it doesn't matter that you may not be the one teaching them about TBRI, because without your position, nobody comes to training. Nobody's fed at training. Like we're going to have a whole lot of problems, right? So when you think about TBRI and day-to-day operations for you and your position, what does that look like?
It is typical to be juggling three different trainings at one time, different phases of the trainings. And that just means personally, I have to stay very organized, reaching out to other people when I need something, but recognizing that maybe they're not working on my schedule, which sometimes is a little crazy. That keep that grace at the front of your thought, Robin, because they will get back to you when they can, or just follow up with them as you need to. It's always wonderful to see the last minute changes on an agenda and go, what do we need material wise for this last minute change on the agenda? I think it's fast, fluid, and flexible. If that hasn't been said on this podcast yet, it needs to be said.
one of the ways that we might be able to improve is to recognize how our roles impact one another still. So I don't know what you're talking about, agenda changes or handout changes, but I'm sure I can get with somebody who might, or maybe I do. I don't know. Maybe can I have a redo?
Well, but here's the thing. Everything is done with the right intent, with the right need to be met, and with the focus on the group that's in front of us. So as long as we all, including the person who's getting those copies made at the last minute, as long as we keep that in mind, it really is okay. And we'll sit and laugh about it later on when we're doing a podcast together.
Yeah. It's so true though. Like it's everything is with intention. You know, we learn information right up to the last minute that, and we are constantly, because we're constantly trying to meet the need, right? It does require those things of us. But when I even think through the lens of TBRI, that mindfulness piece that we all require. And I mean, one thing we haven't said is that you and I work very, very closely on practitioner trainings. You handle all of the hard work and I get a lot of the fun work, but oftentimes my work is more fluid and comes up with those last minute changes. So I think we've even texted this morning about a training we're going to next week. And by the way, listeners, today is Friday. So that mindfulness piece, which means that you have to be mindful and know that I'm going after the mission and doing what feels right for this group. And I have to be mindful and say, Robin may not be able to do this. It's the Friday before training. And I should make a note and learn that I want to do this next time and put it on for the next one. Right. So it does take a lot of mindfulness to meet so many needs, including our own in the moment.
Correct. Correct.
Yeah.
I'd agree with that comment.
Yeah. It's hard though. I know it is. Oh gosh. Okay. Robin, what keeps you plugged into people around the globe? So as I was thinking about your position, and we were talking about the applications earlier, and I read every single application that comes through, and you're right. You know, I mean, basically 100%, and unless they're not full time working in the field, are really great applicants. But I'm always fascinated because as I'm talking to you about the applications, you know so much about these organizations. Like you're like, oh, so and so is doing this, and so and so is doing that, and at this point, they're a name on paper to me. So how do you stay plugged in to all these people? What does that look like?
Well, number one, it's a gift for my training specialists, because as the trainers come in and advocate for a particular organization or project, I learn about them in that capacity. Number two, I think I have the best position in this organization, that when somebody needs something, I'm one of the people they reach out to. So I get to continue to communicate and learn about who they are and what they need. I'm lucky that I'm here at TCU, so I can hear a conversation going up and down the hall. And I think all of those are gifts. And the people that we work with are so incredible.
Oh, they are.
Everybody wants the best. I mean, we are all exactly the same, no matter where we live, no matter who we serve. We want the best of the people that we're interacting with, serving, supporting, and knowing. So I also feel it's my duty to honor them and to make a point to try to remember who they are and try to remember what they're doing, make myself a little note, just because their work is so important. I think it always feels good if someone answers the phone and you can tell them something about them than a previous conversation, because I value them. I truly value them.
You're just incredible. And I think when
they
call
me, they value me too.
Well, I think you're exactly right. I just think, like, you know, when I think through the lens of, you know, like we just said a few minutes ago, the impact that we have in an administrative role is quite profound. And so for anybody that lands on the other side of the phone with you and they're trying to get into training, they're trying to change to another training, they're trying to convince you of why, you know, all kinds of things, right? Like, but at the end of the day, those people feel seen, heard, and valued by you. And that is gold, right? Like, you aren't just pushing paper. You aren't just answering a question. You're literally saying you matter, and your work matters, and I'm going to do what I can to meet your need. Now, it might not be in the time frame that you want. It might not be in the way that you want, right? Which if you're listening, this sounds a whole lot like we are with kids, right? Like, I'm going to hear you. I'm going to see you. I'm going to value you. Sometimes I'm going to have to give you a no. A lot of times I'm going to be able to give you a yes, right? Like, it's embodying TBRI literally over the phone with an adult that's trying to get their needs met. It's just, it's really, really incredible. Okay. So our friends know that Darren calls me Kato. It is my one and only nickname. Robin Shelander, you have a few nicknames that have come through over the years. Shelander, I think that's what Darren calls you. I've heard somebody else say you are get bleep done Shelander. I've heard a description of middle school principal. I think that came out during the Eastern Europe practitioner training. I think I've heard velvet hammer before. I'm not sure which is my favorite, but I think it might be, I don't know. Maybe middle school principal, because I think that is such a tricky role to play. But every single one of those sounds like a balance of structure and nurture, because while you're striving to give a yes, you also have to give no's, right? Even if, I mean, one circumstance I think of is you said you're working on three trainings at one time, and the average lifespan of a practitioner training, right, is 6 to 7 months, I believe, from beginning to end.
Correct.
I might be a little bit off on that.
About 7 months. 6 months. You're
5 to 6 months. And so there are no's that have to be given. There are limits of, you didn't get this done, so I'm so sorry you can't attend, right? We do have some structure in place. Any wisdom for people that are having to, like you just said, we just talked about you meeting all these needs, but there are times you have to say no. So any wisdom you could share for somebody that's in the position of having to balance that maybe they don't have the nicknames yet, but they're trying.
They're working on them, right?
They're working on them.
Got it. So empower other people has been a cornerstone of mine, but also recognizing that when I empower someone, that doesn't mean I get to micromanage their process. If I truly empower somebody, I hand it over to them and I'm grateful for whatever they do, even if it isn't the way that I would do it. I trusted them. I said, run with it. And they do. They delivered it. Fantastic. I always try to say thank you, no matter what. Recognize that someone tried to give of themselves. I've also learned over years that if you just say, I need volunteers, no one will step up. If I say, Sarah Mercado, I need your help, or Darren Jones, I need your help, or David Cross, I need your help. I think that goes back to respecting that you know who the individual is. I've identified that they might have something that they can contribute and add, even if it's silly, like, can you help me please stuff these name badges? People will answer your call if you speak to them directly. I have also learned, and this was probably one of the hardest things I've learned, is that I can be very, very hard on myself.
What?
There are times I can be hard on other people because my expectations are so high. I feel like I represent the Institute and everything we present has to be perfect. And it's okay to not be perfect.
Right, right.
And finally, I feel like my word is my bond. I guess I'm of that older generation, since everyone knows I'm retiring in January. And if I tell somebody I'm going to do it, I'm going to do it. And you spoke to that. Maybe it won't be in the exact time frame that they're anticipating, but it's doing that is very, very important to me. But the biggest thing is empowering others and then accepting with grace what they do for you.
Yeah, it's so hard. It's so hard. And it is hard because we want everything to be done through the Institute with excellence, but we are still, in fact, human, right? I mean, we are completely human, and things don't always go right. And you know, I feel like one of the things that I've learned from you is to prepare for everything that could go wrong so that when the other stuff goes wrong, we have time to deal with it. Right. So we have like kind of backup plans and contingency plans, and we know what's going on and we know the problems that could pop up. But at the same time,
that was like just craziness of working with me through so many years that you you had to have contingency plans. In case you want to go left and I go right.
No, well, I mean, there's no doubt that we have We have bumped into each other or walked in different directions on accident. Or Robin, one time we ended up on the wrong floor of a hotel room trying to get into hotel rooms by accident. We've had some adventures. So if you were in Poland in 2016 and somebody tried to get into your hotel room, that might have been us. but it is true that, like, if we can control what we can control, then we have the capacity to control what we can, to make the changes we need to for things we can't control. And I think that is a nugget of wisdom that I will absolutely take from you. And it's I feel like my work, although I am not, you know this, many people know this, it is not a secret, details are not my strong suit, but I feel like I've become more detail oriented because it allows for us to have the space to manage other issues if that stuff is cared for. And I feel like that's something I learned from you.
I have a lot more confidence in you than you have in you, Sarah. We're going to have to work on that one.
Oh, okay. Oh, well, listen, what we're not doing is a share the mic episode. So let's just keep that tucked away for a beverage and happy hour. Oh, you've seen trainings from Fort Worth to almost every corner of the U.S. We're on 6 continents now. What have the folks taught you?
I touched on that earlier, but let me reiterate it. Doesn't matter where we are all the same. Mm-hmm. We may speak a different language or sleep at different times, but we all want the absolute best for every life that we are touching. Mm-hmm. And that's such an incredible common bond when you think mm-hmm. about it.
Yeah, sure it is. It is true. Like, it doesn't matter where you go on this globe, the people that we work with, I mean, we're all heading in the same direction. Now, our cultures and our environment and our experiences and our histories may lead us to journey down a different way to get there. But man, you are exactly right.
Well, and what's interesting is they're so thankful to be involved with the Institute. And we're so thankful for the experience that they bring when we have an opportunity to interact with them. It's amazing.
It really is. It's so much fun. We are just the luckiest, aren't we?
Yes, we are.
We really are. How do you think your journey has been impacted over the years because of the work that you do?
Let's see if I can say that without making it obvious that I'm crying.
You can cry.
When I came to work at the Institute and the background of the jobs that I had, my definition of success was to be invisible.
Oh,
in the work
Robin.
That I do and practitioner training, everything. If I've done a great job, they don't see me, they don't know me, it goes on flawlessly. So number one, my journey that now I stand next to Sarah Mercado, Darren Jones, Amanda Purvis, David Cross, Karen Purvis, and I feel mm-hmm. like I speak as part of the voice mm-hmm. of what we have all accomplished. The other thing that my journey has done is it has so improved the relationship with my family. Mm-hmm. When I started here, I had my youngest two were in college, my oldest one was out, and then my husband. And learning about sensory and learning about interpersonal relationships, it has brought us all to another level. And mm-hmm. I will always, always, always mm-hmm. be grateful to the Institute for those two gifts.
Mm-hmm. Mm. Yeah. Robin, it's the same, man. It's like universal, right? Like, just thinking about where, I mean, you and I have talked about this, right? Like where our families are pre and post TBRI and what a difference it's made. Thank you for sharing that. And yeah, well, Robin, I don't want you to retire. I know you don't care, but I don't want you to retire. I mean, we have been on a journey. You and I, over the years, we have had so much fun. We have had some chaos along the way. We have shared some amazing conversations and amazing beverages and amazing meals. And I have just been so honored to get to journey alongside you. I can't fathom, and I know you can't fathom, the impact that your work has done on this globe. And I don't think it's possible to understand, because our work as an institute as a whole is really sort of boundaryless, and you impact every single thing that we do. So I hope as you go into retirement, you can take a step back and look back and just know we are all so grateful. Every person that's called you, and whether they've received a yes or a no, is grateful for the way you've impacted them. Our team is grateful, and the people around the globe are grateful too. Thank you for all the lives you have changed, and thank you for being here.
And thank you for letting me be part of it.
The TBRI podcast is produced by the Care and Purpose Institute of Child Development at TCU. To learn more about TBRI and the resources mentioned in this episode, please visit child.tcu.edu/podcast.